read something from the end of the Seder. After they, thank you. After the brothers return from burying Yaakov, the brothers become afraid, and it says, "Vayiru achi Yosef kimei savihem." They saw that Yaakov was dead. "Vayomru lu yistemenu Yosef." Now, perhaps Yosef is going to hate us. "Vahashiv Yosef lanu es kol harosh gamal nosa." Now he's going to take revenge on us. He's going to pay us back everything that we did for him. So the question is, why all of a sudden did they, were they choshed, did they suspect that Yosef now going to take revenge? Right? Why they saw that Yosef all this time, right, had been so benevolent to them and forgave them. All of a sudden, right, they are aroused to the fact that maybe Yosef's going to take revenge. And also the language is difficult. The word perhaps can be im, pen, lu. Okay? And they're all if, maybe. But they all have different connotations. Pen means maybe this will happen, but I don't want it to happen. Right? Lest this happen. Right? Pen, right. Im means it could happen, it could not happen. Parv. Lu means I want it to happen. So what they should have said is pen yistemenu Yosef, lest Yosef now hate us and take revenge on us. But they said lu yistemenu. Lu means like halavai. So what does that mean? How can they say lu yistemenu Yosef? Right? Sounds like they want it to happen. And also, why were they choshed him? So it could be the following. Yosef, what he put them through was a kapara. Okay, meaning the following. That was one of the reasons why Yosef put them through the ordeal that he did. They should get atoned for their sin in this world. And basically what he did, they sold him as a slave, right, and made him feel like he was, put him into jeopardy or whatever. So he did the same thing to them, that they should have what's called Tshuvas HaMishkol. Tshuvas HaMishkol is that whatever you caused someone else when you did a sin, or whatever benefit you had from the sin, that it's weighed out and come and balanced out by getting the opposite that you get what you gave. What? It's almost like mida connected mida, but not exactly. In other words, if a person got enjoyment from eating something not kosher, then Tshuvas HaMishkol would be to fast. And to if it's done willingly, then the person fasts to make up for what he enjoyed. If it's done from heaven, then maybe the person gets a stomach ache from eating something, and that compensates or balances out the enjoyment he got from the eating, the non-kosher thing. Right? Yeah, kasher zomam laso, something similar to that. What you intended to do, you get back. So, in order to effect an atonement for them in this world, that they shouldn't have to suffer in the next world, Yosef put them through an ordeal which really was only perceived, wasn't real. Right? They only thought they were in danger. They only were willing now to become slaves to him in the end of the ordeal in place of Binyamin. So that put them through what they put him through, and gave them an atonement. Okay. But Yosef Lechora, but they wanted to kill Yosef. Right? They didn't want to just sell him as a slave. Originally, they wanted to kill him. Where was the atonement for that? So they assumed that Yosef understood that they never would have killed him. They just talked big. That was a bluff. That immediately, as soon as Reuven said, don't kill him outright, put him in the pit, and then Yehuda came along and said, let's not kill him, let's sell him, that they accepted it immediately, meaning they never really intended to kill him. His life was never nearly in danger. All he was in danger of is being sold as a slave, and that he gave them atonement.
In the pit, there was dead. Yeah. It could have been
that. Yeah, but there could be they didn't know. Yeah, but there could be they didn't know that there were snakes and scorpions. Otherwise, they wouldn't have thrown him in there. Right? They would have known.
It was a miracle. There wasn't, because normally in a pit like that, there's always
Yeah, whatever. But it could be that what's it called? They didn't know about that. Because they knew about that. They wouldn't have thrown him into that pit because their intention was not to kill him right out. And throwing him onto snakes and scorpions would have killed him right out. So there's different opinion, but that simply probably didn't know. No, but that's not true. Because if you throw somebody into a pit where there are snakes and scorpions and they fall on them, that's almost like killing him biyodayim. It's like putting his into the fangs of the snake. In any case, what happened? What happened was that when they came back from the funeral, they passed by the place where they threw Yosef into the boar. On the way back to Mitzrayim, they passed by that place. Somebody once asked me, it's not possible because it's in any case, but that's what the Medrash says. They came, they went roundabout, they went sightseeing, let's say. They passed by that place, and Yosef told them, I have to make a bracha. There's a bracha you make where a miracle is done, right, to you. Baruch she'asali neis b'makom hazeh. You haven't been in that place for 30 days, a miracle was done to you, you make a bracha, she'asali neis b'makom hazeh. Yosef went, he made that bracha. So the brother said, oh, he made the bracha, he remembers what happened, he's now going to take revenge on us. The obvious question is, what do they think? He forgot? Right? That now only that he made the bracha, now they know he remembers. And otherwise they would have thought he forgot. The halacha is that you only make that bracha if your life was in danger. If your life was not endangered, right? The miracle was not a life-saving miracle, you don't make that bracha. You only make the bracha on a life-saving, right? I had a doctor, was a congregant of mine in Miami, he was hit by a car on Hanukkah, and what's it called, and it was a miracle that he survived. He was thrown into the air, and all he had was a broken leg, and otherwise he survived. It was a mamish, a miracle, and a life-saving miracle. So every time he goes back to Miami, he moved away from there, he has to make a bracha when he comes to that place. But if it's not a life-threatening miracle, you don't make that bracha. The brother said like this, Yosef put us through an ordeal to give us atonement for selling him as a slave, and we got our atonement. But he never put us through an ordeal, right, that would have atoned for wanting to kill him. Okay? But we assume that he never thought that we wanted to kill him, that we just were bluffing, that we never would have done that. And he understood that too. But now that he made that bracha, right, it must be that he thinks his life was in danger. Because if his life wouldn't have been in danger, he wouldn't have made that bracha. That means that he actually thinks that he could have been killed by us. And he never gave us atonement for that. So now, lu yistameinu Yosef, right? Halavai, that Yosef will hate us and put us through the ordeal to, because he understood that we really meant it. We think we didn't, but maybe we're making a mistake. That's the idea. On the other hand, that's not what happened. Yosef Taka knew that his life had been in danger, but not from the brothers. Because he knew there were snakes and scorpions in the pit, which the brothers didn't know. So he made the bracha because of the snakes and scorpions that he survived. But they thought he was making the bracha because he survived their attempt to kill him. Right? And therefore they misunderstood his intention. That's why they said, Lu yistameinu Yosef. Okay, let's go to another part of this. So they come to him, yeah.
Is there any point, because Yosef was being tragic, in Tanakh, what I understand, was one of the characters that made the biggest improvement, character change, that he was arrogant and haughty. He was not a nice person. When he was thrown in the pit, he was a horrible person, in fact. He was hated by his brothers, but he caused the hatred. So would it be fair to say that he did a lot of soul searching,
I mean,
he changed and then became Yosef
HaTzadik
only after all of his character
changed? Could be. Even Yosef, what he did, he felt justified. He felt that there's a whole, I have a book called Outlooks and Insights. And in there, the chapter on Vayeshev is called The Anatomy of a Sale. And it explains what the brothers thought, what Yosef thought. And each one, according to what they thought, were doing what was right. Weren't doing something terrible, but they made a mistake, right? And the reason that their mistake came about is because they were jealous, or they were immature, and therefore rushed to conclusions or whatever. it didn't come from a bad character or whatever. It came from immaturity. It came from mistakes that were made. It came from jealousy, underlying things that made them feel justified in what they were doing. Most of us act like that. We don't really do things that are bad or think that we're bad or whatever. We all think that we're justified in what we're doing, right? And doing it with pure motives, when in fact we're doing it because we have biased, subjective reasons for doing things that we do.
So,
but on the other hand, Yosef was responsible to a certain degree, the Sfarim say, and yeah, he had to work on whatever. But in any case, the brothers, though, carried out and harmed him, which he didn't harm them. They harmed him. He, at most, he tried to harm them. Okay, but he didn't do anything to them. They did to him. So when they came to ask Mechila, they came to beg forgiveness from him for what they did to him. He said, look, you intended to do bad to me, but God intended it to be good. So you don't need my forgiveness. What's it called? It worked out for the good. Not only didn't you harm me, but worked out to my benefit and your benefit. So you don't have to, I don't have to forgive you, right? There's nothing to forgive. The Gemara says that when Rabbi Akiva came to the following pasuk, he would cry. What was the pasuk? Isha hafeiram v'Hashem yislach lo. The case is talking like this. A woman made a nether. She's not going to eat cake. She's going on a diet. She made a nether. I'm not eating cake. Okay. And the husband heard her nether the day that she made it, and he has the right to annul the nether. He doesn't have to tell her. He just has to say, I hear the nether she made, it's annulled. Because it affects him. He doesn't want his wife to, what's it called, not to eat cake. He likes the more of her, the better. So what's it called? So he doesn't want to annul. He doesn't want her to have this nether. And something that affects him, he has the right to annul the nether. And he did that. He hears the nether. He's in another room. He heard her make this vow. He annulled it. But he forgot to tell her that he annulled it. And she thinks she has this nether. She holds out for 2 weeks. And 2 weeks later, she swallows a whole chocolate cake. And she feels terrible, right? Not only spiritually, physically also. And she goes to her husband and she says, I did a terrible thing today. 2 weeks ago, I made a nether. I won't eat cake. Today, I swallowed a whole chocolate cake. The husband says, don't feel so bad. I annulled that nether. You never had a nether. So you didn't do anything wrong. So Torah says, even though her husband annulled the nether, she needs forgiveness. Why? Because she intended to do something wrong. And the Gemara says, we learn from here that if you intend to eat treif, but by accident you eat kosher, you need forgiveness. Now, a person walks into a treifa restaurant, and unbeknownst to him, the treifa restaurant's kitchen burnt down the night before, and they have no way of preparing any food. And they made a deal with the glatt kosher restaurant down the block that if anybody orders anything, they'll deliver it through the back door and serve it on disposable things, whatever, as if it's theirs. The guy comes in and he says, I'm tired of eating these kosher food. It has no taste. I want to eat something really tasteful. I want a non-kosher steak. He orders a non-kosher steak. The guy calls up the glatt kosher restaurant, send me over a steak. They send over the steak. He puts it on disposable things, serves it. The guy is eating the steak. He says, ah, this is a steak, not like the glatt kosher place like down the block. And then he finds out that it was kosher. So he still has to do tshuva. Because he intended to eat treif. Niskaven lecho boser chazir. If you intended to eat pork, the also biyado boser klem, by accident you ate kosher, you need kapara. Okay. So it says, whenever Rabbi Akiva would come to this pasuk, he would cry. Why would he cry? So Reb David Kronglass, who was the Mashgiach in Ner Yisrael Yeshiva in Baltimore, said the following. He said, when the brothers came to Yosef, and they said, we want forgiveness for what we did to you. What did Yosef said? I don't have to forgive you. Because you intended bad, but it worked out for the good. So I don't have to forgive you. Now Yosef made a mistake, according to him. Because if you intend to do bad, but it works out good, you still need forgiveness because your intention was bad. And because Yosef did not forgive them, and they needed forgiveness, yeah, so they never really got forgiveness, which they needed. because of that, one of the kaparas for Mechiras Yosef was Asara Harugei Malchus, the 10 martyrs. Rabbi Akiva was one of them. So every time Rabbi Akiva came to this sentence, he knew Beruach HaKodesh that one day he's going to suffer because of this, and he's going to be one of the 10 martyrs because Yosef never gave forgiveness, and the Pasuk says you need forgiveness in that case. Okay, that's what he said. Okay. Lamaisa, it's very difficult to say that. We'll see in one second. There's an Orach Chaim HaKodesh who speaks about this, and a Sforno. Both of them say that Yosef was right. You don't need forgiveness in this situation. The Orach Chaim HaKodesh says it's like the case of a person intending to poison somebody, and instead of poison, by mistake, they gave him wine. Do they need kapara or not? He says, no. I don't have to go ask you forgiveness for giving you wine. I intended to poison you. There's no prohibition of not even intending to do something to somebody. I didn't do anything against you. Right? So, when do we say that if you intend to do something bad, but it turns out good, right? You need forgiveness. That's between you and God. Because then you intended to do bad. You intended to rebel against God. Every sin has two parts to it. A rebellion against God and the effect of the sin. So if you actually did something wrong on purpose, so you have two things. You rebelled against God and the effect of the sin affects you. So you need two kinds of forgiveness. One, forgiveness from the king, and the other one, the doctor has to heal you from the effect of the sin. If you intended to do bad, but it didn't work out, right? You ended up doing something good, not bad. You need atonement for rebelling against the king, but you don't need the therapeutic, doctor remedy for what you did bad because you didn't do anything bad.
So why is there it Harugei
Malchus? Hold on one second. We're going to get to that. We'll ask you a question on this. So, right. So now, what's it called? So, therefore, that doesn't apply to sins between man and man. Because there's no prohibition to rebel against a fellow Jew, right? There's only a prohibition to do something against him. But if I have intention to rebel against you, there's no prohibition of that. So the brothers had intention to do something wrong to Yosef, but if they didn't actually do anything wrong, right, then they don't need any kapara. That's only if you intend to rebel against God, that's something wrong. But intending to rebel against somebody else or do something wrong to somebody else, and all you have is intention, then you don't need kapara for that. Okay, that's what the Orach Chaim HaKodesh says. The Sforno says the opposite, a little bit different. He says like this, that only applies that if you intended to do something wrong and it worked out for the right, you need kapara, is if you really intended to do something wrong. What happens if you thought you were doing something right? And it really was wrong, but you made a mistake. You thought, right, for instance, you thought this was kosher meat, okay, but it turned out to be a trefa restaurant, but in the end, they served you kosher meat. So you thought you were going to eat kosher, in the end you did eat kosher, it's only that you made a mistake thinking it's kosher because, what's it called, really it should have been treif. So then on both ends it's okay. You didn't intend to rebel against God and nothing happened. So you don't need any kapara. He says that's the same thing with the brothers. The brothers, when they wanted to get rid of Yosef, they thought they were justified. They thought Yosef was a rodef, he was a terrible person, like you said, who's trying to do them in, and the halach is habola hargecha hashkim laharga. Somebody wants to kill you, you kill him first. Right? That's the halacha. Right? The only exception to that is the state of Israel. Right? That if Arabs want to kill you, you let them kill you, and then afterwards, after you're dead, you can fight back if you want. Then you have a right, according to the laws, to do something. Right? But that's halacha. So they thought that Yosef is trying to do them in this world, the next world, and therefore they had a right to kill him, and they were very benevolent, just selling him. So they thought they were doing something wrong, but wrong. They thought they were doing something right, but really, had it not worked out for the good, it would have been wrong. So that's like, I thought I'm eating kosher, but really it was treif. Then you need kapara because you ate treif. So even though you didn't intend to rebel against God, but the effect of the sin is in you. You need the therapeutic refuah from the sin itself. But if I thought I was doing something right, and really at the time it could have been wrong, but in the end it worked out for the good, then nothing is wrong. I didn't intend to rebel, and the effect is not there, because in the end it worked out for the good. That's what the Sfarno says. So according to this, Rav David Krongles is wrong. Right? Yosef was right. They did not need kapara. They didn't need to be forgiven. The problem only is the following. That would be good if the only sin was between man and man. But every sin between man and man is also a sin between man and God. Because God said not to do that. So therefore, if I intended to kill my brother or whatever, right, and that was wrong at the spot, right, then I intended to rebel against God. God said, don't kill somebody else. And you thought you were justified, but you really weren't justified. Yosef wasn't trying to do you in. So in the end, it worked out for the good, but your intention was to do something bad, right? And therefore, you need kapara. And the fact that they were shogeg, that they thought they were doing something right, the Torah tells us that is not justified. Because they didn't make an honest mistake. You know why they thought what they thought? Is because they were jealous of him. And that led them to see things distorted. In other words, they themselves brought this mistake upon themselves. It wasn't an honest mistake. It was a mistake generated by jealousy. So therefore, it's not a real shogeg. Shogeg means I made a mistake. I thought this was kosher meat, and I ate it. It was treifa meat. Right? But if you fooled yourself into thinking it's kosher meat, right? You convinced yourself or whatever wrongly, then that's not called shogeg. That's not called a mistake. You caused a mistake. You brought yourself to that mistake. So in any case, so therefore, what Yosef should have said is like this. You don't need my forgiveness. Because what you did to me between man and man, just because you intended to do bad, there it makes a difference what it worked out. But you still need forgiveness from God. That's what he should have told them. And they understood when Yosef said, you don't need forgiveness, you don't forgive us at all. And that's not true. Between man and God, you do need forgiveness. And since they never asked forgiveness from God, they didn't do tshuva. Because they felt that we're, like Yosef said, we're exonerated. It's nothing we knew nothing to tshuva about. Therefore, the blemish remained and needed to be atoned for by the Asara Arugei Malchus. And even worse, according to some, was because Yitzias Shibud Mitzrayim happened because of Mechiras Yosef. And we still haven't gotten out of that completely. So we're still suffering from that till today. But Rabbi Akiva specifically was one of the ones who suffered. That's why he cried when he came to this pasuk. Yeah.
Between the man and man, the examples you brought, either with the kosher meat or the wine, the poison, nothing bad was done at all. Here, he was sold as a slave, he suffered. It was definitely bad. In the end, it worked out good. But it was definitely suffering, it was definitely bad. It wasn't like it was only good.
So it could be, I hear, it's a good question. But Yosef himself, you can say that, because you're looking at it, you know, from an observer. Yosef, it happened to him. Yosef said, you don't have to ask me mechila. Why? Because all the bad that happened to me, in the end, right, I didn't consider it bad. Because the good so outweighed the bad that I went through. I saw God's hand in everything. And perhaps the reason I had to go through all these things to teach me a lesson, like you said. Right? Now, we're up in the tshuva. So I don't consider that bad. That was good. The end result was really good. I became second in command in Egypt to save my brothers and to set them way for the Jewish people. It was worth all the suffering. So in Yosef's mind, he said it. You don't need any kapara. Why didn't he say, look, yeah, you're right. It worked out in the good, but 12 years or whatever, I was really suffering. No, it erased that suffering, or he understood that that suffering was good for him. So nothing was bad. Okay? Yosef himself, right? You could say that, but Yosef went through it and he said, you don't need anything. You didn't do anything bad to me. Okay.
During that whole ordeal, the first time that Yosef is putting them through it, they spoke among themselves, which Yosef overheard, which is described in the narrative, that God has uncovered our sin. They referred to that, and they referred to that they...
Right, because they didn't know that it worked out for the good. They thought that Yosef, he said, was dead or was a slave somewhere. At that point. It's only in the end, when they saw how it all worked out, that then Yosef could say, look, you see the whole picture now, nothing bad happened from what you said. But at that point, they thought something did bad happen. Okay.
Can I ask a question? Just in general, if you do something to a person and you go apologize, you know, I'm sorry that I did that to you, it's not enough. You also have to apologize. You have to do tshuva.
Right. First, you have to, it says, if you do something, let's say you steal something from somebody. okay, or you're better, because that's not so clear. Punch somebody in the nose. So you have to do a few things. First of all, you have to pay him for the doctor bills, for the pain, whatever is included in restitution for the damage. Then you have to appease him, and ask forgiveness, right? And try to make nice to him because you hurt him also. Not only did you damage him monetarily, you also hurt his feelings or whatever. So you have to now appease him and get forgiveness. After all of that, then you have to go to the Rabbanu Shlomo and ask forgiveness from him for doing what he told you not to do to another person.
So if you would punch someone in the nose and you would say, I'm so sorry, I want to pay the doctor bill, and the person would say, no, it's okay. You don't have to be sorry.
And you don't have to pay me. I like my nose the way it is now, right? I didn't like it the way it was before.
If you would just leave that hanging and say, well, you said I didn't have to apologize. You still have to do tshuva.
Right. Okay. It says that Yaakov Avinu, this is the bracha he gave his children. Right? Zosat Yashadibir Lem Aviyam Vayivorechosam. Everyone he gave a bracha. Okay. Lechor is not true. Three of them didn't get brachas. Reuven, what was Reuven's bracha? You are impetuous and you lost the kahuna, the malchus, and the bechorah. For a bracha like that, I wouldn't come. Shimon and Levi, cursed is their anger. What kind of bracha? So some say, the Ibn Ezra says, V'zos asher dibir lehem aviyam. What we have in the Torah is what God, when he spoke to them. And he gave them brachas. We don't know what the brachas are. But he blessed all of them. We don't know what those brachas are. But all of the Medrashim and most of the commentaries say what's in the Torah is the brachas. So how do you understand the brachas of Reuven and Shimon and Levi? So I always like to say the following. What was the bracha that Yaakov gave his children? Some of them he said, you're like a snake, you're like a donkey. I was very nice, but what kind of bracha is that? Now, the biggest bracha you can give someone is the bracha of self-knowledge. To know who they are, what they are, what they're capable of doing, what they're not capable of doing, what their potential is. You want to give a person a bracha, let him know what he can do, what his potential is, so he can realize that potential. It says that Chaviv Ha'adam Shenivra B'Tzelem Elokim, people are precious, they're created in God's image. Chiba Yisera Nodas, but it's extra preciousness that God let us know we're created in His image. Because you can be created in God's image, and if you don't know it, then it's of no use. But if you know it, then you can use it properly, you can develop it, you can realize it, actualize it, or whatever. If you don't even know what talents you have, so the biggest bracha a teacher can give a student, or a parent can give a child, so let them know what potential they have, what talents they have, abilities, capabilities, or whatever. But there's also, goes along with that, it's a special bracha to let someone know what they can't do. Example I always like to give is, imagine somebody who has a singing voice that is the most horrid thing you ever heard. When he opens his mouth, it sounds like dragging your nails on a chalkboard. That's how bad it is. And people run away in fright, right? And you see this person one day go to the library and take out a stack of books on how to be a chazan. Wouldn't it be a bracha to go over to him and say, look, unless you plan to be a chazan in a home for the deaf, this is not for you, right? Because you're going to open your mouth and you're not going to have a minion. People will run out, right? So you may have other talents. Be an author. But don't do anything that you need to have to sing that is not you. Are you saving the person a tremendous amount of embarrassment, tremendous amount of waste of time? You're going to spend years practicing to be a chazan, and it'll never work.
Won't believe you.
Won't right? believe you. Your friend won't talk to you anymore.
So, right, there are a lot of chazanim, right? We shouldn't have told that. So, it's a bracha. That's what Yaakov gave you, Reuven. Reuven, you could have been the melech, the bechor. Don't waste your time on that, the kohen. It's not you. You lost that. Work on being what Reuven is. But don't worry, don't work on this. That's a bracha to tell him that. Same thing, Shimon and Levi, you have a problem. You're the anger. I'm going to help you control your anger by cursing your anger, not you. But I'm going to curse your anger and try to help you to contain it. Because that's something that's negative. If you want to really bring out your potential, you can't do it if you're angry people and react to things in a negative way. So I'm going to help you control your anger. It's a bracha. You have the qualities of a snake in a positive way. You have the qualities of a donkey in a positive way. Use those qualities. That's a bracha. That's the bracha that Yaakov Avinu gave his children.
You're like a donkey, like someone who's stubborn to do a mitzvah.
What?
Like someone wants to do a mitzvah, no matter what everybody tells him, he's going to do this mitzvah. That's it.
Right.
That's being a donkey, right?
Right. Could be. What's it called? The donkey was that. Mentioned something else. It says Yisachar was compared to a donkey. It says Vayar Menucha Kitov V'Esar. It's Yisachar that rest is very good, and the land is very very pleasant. Vayet Shich Molisbal, and he put his shoulder down to carry the weight of Torah. So if he saw that dressed is good, why did he put his shoulder down? Everybody in this world has to work. Nobody comes in this world to rest. Resting, they do in cemeteries. In this world, right, it's what's it called, a world of to be dynamic. That's what the world is for. So people can put their effort into a lot of things, right? You can put your effort into a lot of tzaras that you have. Many people have problems and they have to deal with the problems or whatever. And that's what the world is all about, dealing with situations that are less than perfect. Because if God wanted to create a perfect world with perfect human beings, there would be no purpose for this world. That's called the world to come. In that world, everybody's perfect, nobody has any problems, everything is what's it called, is perfection, fine. But God put us in a world, an imperfect world, so we can perfect ourselves. And perfecting yourself means dealing with difficulties and overcoming them. So people can have difficulties come that they have to work on. What happens if a person has no difficulties? Then he shouldn't remain passive. Now he should take and put his efforts into positive things. So that's what it says. Yisachar saw that he doesn't have any problems. The land is great. There's plenty of time to rest. And so that enables me not to be involved with all these peripheral problems. I don't have any peripheral problems. Now I'll put all my effort into Torah and mitzvahs. Because you're supposed to put your effort in this world. You're not supposed to take it easy. So that's what it means by Yechichmo. So that was like a donkey. A donkey is a beast of burden. Right? It's made to carry, it's not made to sit around and rest. Its purpose is to bear a burden. That's what this purpose in this world, bear a burden. You can have burdens put on you, but if the burdens aren't there, then you put your shoulder down and accept the burden because that's what you're in this world for. If you're free from outside burdens, then put your burden into Torah and Mitzvahs directly. That's the idea. You know, it's interesting, both in the bracha of Yaakov and the bracha of Moshe later on, Zvulun comes before Yisachar. Because Zvulun worked and supported Yisachar in learning Torah. And Zvulun's reward could be greater than Yisachar's reward. Because Yisachar learned Torah and he got the tremendous satisfaction of sitting and learning Torah. Zvulun had to go out and work. He didn't get that satisfaction. And he supported Yisachar and got and split the reward with him. So he got the Torah reward, but he didn't get the satisfaction of sitting learning Torah. He had to sit and work. He had to go out to work. So his reward could be greater than Yisachar's reward. So Zvulun comes first. Also, more simply, without Zvulun, Yisachar couldn't have learned Torah. So Zvulun has to come first, because you need Zvulun's support before Yisachar can sit and learn Torah. Right? Without Zvulun, Yisachar couldn't have learned Torah. Right? He wouldn't have been able to eat. So Zvulun provided for him. Zvulun comes first. Right? Chronologically, he comes first.
Why is Ephraim before Menashe then?
The Ephraim and Menashe didn't support Ephraim. They just... Since you asked the question, so we'll end with that. The bracha of Ephraim Menashe. It says that the Jewish people are blessed. We give our sons a bracha, Yisimcha, Elchim, Ephraim, Menashe. Why don't we go for broke? You know, why don't you be like Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov? And it says, a person should say, Mosa Yagiu Maisei L'Maisei Avosei Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. When will my deeds reach the deeds of Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov? So why do we give them a bracha to be Ephraim and Menashe? And if we're already giving them a bracha not to be like the Avos, but to be like the Shvatim, why not go for Reuven and Shimon? Why Ephraim and Menashe, which is the next generation? The idea is that every single one of us has within us the potential of the Avos. What Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov did, they were Avos. It was not just fathers. They were the foundation of the Jewish people. And whatever they did created a reservoir of power that goes genetically to all Jews. And certain areas, we have the power of Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. And that's why a person has to say, when will my deeds reach their deeds? Means when will I bring out the potential I have that they put into me through spiritual genetics? It's part of our makeup, right? We have certain things, not everything, but certain things, the emunah of the avos, a lot of things that we have, that's called schus avos. It's not just protexia, that we have some kind of merit from our forefathers. But we contain within us that potential. So we tell the Rabban Shalom, look, God, I may not be living up to that potential, but I have it, give me another chance. That's schus avos. So how do I know that we have that potential? How do we know that we inherited that, that it went on for all generations? The proof is of Ephraim and Manasseh. Why? Because if I know that the original Shvatim, Reuven, Shimon, had that potential, maybe that's because they grew up amongst the Avos. They lived concurrently with some of the Avos, and they grew up in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, they have that potential. But how do I know it went on to future generations of people who didn't grow up amongst the Avos and didn't grow up even in Eretz Yisrael? Ephraim Manasseh. Because Yaakov says, V'yikorei bohem shmi v'shem avosai Avraham v'yitzchak. My name and the name of my fathers, meaning my abilities, capabilities and talents, my essence, my qualities is in these two children. That means that it transferred even to the third generation of people who didn't grow up amongst the Avos and grew up in Mitzrayim. Totally estranged from the Avos. That means it's there, and if it's by them, it's by everyone. So the bracha we give our children is, the Rabban Hashem should make you like Ephraim, you should realize what potential you have. Just like Ephraim and Manasseh had the potential of the Avos, you have the same potential. But Ephraim comes before Manasseh. Why? Because Yaakov saw, Beruach HaKodesh, that even though Manasseh was the Bechor, and he had more potential than Ephraim, ultimately, Ephraim would develop more of his lesser potential than Manasseh developed of his more potential. And even though I'm telling you that potential is very important and you have tremendous potential, that's the bracha I'm giving you, right? But never think that potential is enough. It's what you realize that potential. Because Ephraim had less potential, but he realized more of it. He comes before Manasseh, who had more potential. Potential is like a zero. If you have a lot of potential, you have a lot of zeros, still zero. If you put something in front of it, it's important. If you don't put anything in front of it, then the zeros remain zero. So that's the bracha. The girls, we give the bracha. We say you could be like the imahos. So the reason you don't make the bracha to be like the avos is because they created the potential. You just inherit it and develop it, but you can't create it. So you can't be mamish like Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. But you can be like Ephraim and Manasseh, who inherited that potential and developed it. So then why do we give our daughters the bracha, right, that they should be like Sar Rivka Racha Valeya, right? Bechara, they also can't create potential. I was thinking two answers. One the women will like, one they won't like. I'll tell you the one you won't like first, and then we'll end with the one you will like. The one you won't like is that Sar Rivka, Rachel and Leah didn't create potential either. They just helped their husbands create their potential. They were just helpmates. They didn't create potential. Okay. And therefore, I told you. And therefore, you can tell your daughter to be like Sar Rivka Rea, right? They're not the idea. Or, second shot, the one you will like, is that women can create potential. And you can be like the imahos. How do I know that? Because in the physical world, women can create life from their own bodies. New potential, which a man can't do. So a woman physically can do that, she spiritually can do it too. So women can create new potential. They can be mamish like Sarah Rivka Rachavaleh, who also created potential. A man, the most he can do is realize the potential that he inherited. He can't create new potential. So he can't be like Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. He can be the most like Ephraim and Manasseh. But the women who can create potential, new potential physically, can create it spiritually too. Therefore, they could be mamish like Sarah Rivka Rachavaleh, who also created potential.